White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 499.
You are listening to the AU Wishbone, almost credible sports discussion on the White Rocket Entertainment Network.
Bye-bye, Bo! Touchdown, Auburn!
The kick is good! Auburn wins!
Shivers just ran through a man! Touchdown, Auburn!
Hello! Welcome to the AU Wishbone. We won! Brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment. It's always better when we win, isn't it? And when we really win big, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment in association with thewareaglereader.com. And most importantly, by people like you, the Auburn family, the AU Wishbone family. You know, you are our Patreon.com family. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined as always by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
John, I don't know if you heard, but we won a tackle football game against LUS.
And I am delighted. I am pleased.
Yes, it's always good to beat LSU, but it's especially good to, as the kids say, BTHO LSU of. There's an of in there, isn't there? Yeah. And we really did. I mean, it looked like the 2014 game in a way.
We annihilated them, and it was glorious.
It was. I didn't feel comfortable until, like, the subs were in and it was late in the fourth quarter. I kept thinking, all right, now, remember 2018. It's like remember the Alamo, you know, remember 2018. Don't get complacent.
This is a good question for everybody else. When did you feel comfortable? I think the moment Anders Carlson made that tackle on the kickoff return, I was like, that's it. Like, that was their big moment to get back in the game and seize the momentum.
It was.
And when that didn't happen, I was like, eh?
Yeah, it doesn't really qualify, but I'm going to make that our
Factoid of the Week.
Factoid of the Week.
I haven't done that in a long time, but it's worthy. That was, yeah, I mean, because that, you're right. That's the kind of play that when you're going to lose, you give up, and Big Mo changes jerseys, as they say. But he reached out with his 9-foot-11-inch frame, and he tackled that fella, and then that was all she wrote, and that was something. Wow. So, John, I know you're going to explain this to us all over the course of the show, but I'll just tell you the thing that's on my mind in terms of this right now. How did that team lose to South Carolina?
Well, I mean, you want to know why? How we lost to South Carolina? Because Auburn outplayed South Carolina, but Auburn made mistakes in that game.
Yeah.
We turned the ball over three times. We made a bunch of dumb penalties.
Mm-hmm.
We had problems executing on third down. And over the last two games, and especially in this game, Auburn stopped making mistakes.
It's true. It was a remarkably, with a couple of exceptions, right? It was a remarkably mistake-free game against a big name. I don't know about everything about them this year, but a big name opponent. It was us not making mistakes. And also, it felt like we won both lines of scrimmage, which I was not expecting given recent performance.
Yes. And LSU, again, they're not as, you know, stout on the lines as they have been, but they have a lot of highly recruited guys and a lot of talent on both lines, and we dominated both lines of scrimmage in that game.
How did that happen? Again, I'm not complaining. And if shining any sunlight on it causes it to dissolve and disappear, then I retract the question. But I'm just curious, how were we able to do it? I don't know.
I think the offensive line, again, it was a big, you know, because this was without Brandon Council. Ray Jones stepped in. But they ran the ball well. But then also, I think Auburn's kind of was worried about their pass rush. LSU was leading the SEC in, like, sacks and tackles for loss heading into that game.
Yeah.
And they didn't come close to Bo Nix. I think he's gotten much better about being decisive.
Yes.
And about not trying. And he's stopped doing that thing where he tries to string every play out. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And keep it alive to throw it. And instead, he's just going to be decisive and run it and get upfield. And you know, the offensive line blocked well, and the defensive line played on a whole nother level in this game.
They really were
in the backfield. They were pushing guys backward consistently. We beat Ole Miss, but the defensive line did not play particularly well in that game, and they played 10 times better in this game. It was dramatic.
The thing about Bo is, he didn't do hardly any of that stand back and survey the field and wait for the offensive line to break down the protection. That is what I hate. That is my least favorite thing in football, even more than going for two in the second quarter. my least favorite thing in football is drop back, stand there like the Statue of Liberty, holding the football until somebody sacks you. I hate that on any team unless it's Alabama. But he it seemed like the plan from the get-go this week was that he would take the snap, make a quick read, and if that wasn't there, he was on the move, but not in a frantically running to escape kind of way, like I'm advancing from point A to point B and then I'll look again kind of a thing. And then if that wasn't there, he would run. And it was kind of like, it felt like we did a lot of kind of on the fly RPO action.
We did. And do you remember like a couple years ago when Jalen Hurts was at Alabama, they were doing some RPOs and we were like, you know what? I think it was the game they had Amari Cooper. We'd rather him just run the ball, and their running backs are really good. But we wanted them to read the RPO in a way that Hurts would just keep the ball, because that was kind of the least terrible of the three options.
Right? Yeah, it's just a sad state of affairs. But yes, you're right.
Yeah, but it worked in that game.
Yeah,
that was the 2017 game, and it worked. Right. And so in this game, you know, and over the course of the season, Auburn has been throwing a lot out of the RPO. Mm-hmm. A lot more than maybe they should sometimes. And so one of the things is a lot of those RPOs have a bow run option. And so he started doing that more.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that really, you know, and LSU came in with we're going to stop Tank Bigsby. We're going to bring everybody in the middle of the defense, like right towards the center, and stop that inside run. And if we do that, we think we can win. And Auburn was like, that's fine. You all run toward the center. We're going to be out here in the perimeter doing our thing.
That's right. And then they couldn't stop Tank even then.
Yes.
It was as good of a plan as they could really do. But even then, it didn't really work. I'm just looking. I know that Bo led the team in rushing with 81 yards. But Tank wasn't. Let's see. Tank had 71.
Yeah.
And two touchdowns and a 26-yard long. So... yeah, it didn't exactly work the way they drew it up. So what's amazing beyond that is that we had 206 yards rushing. And by the way, Mark Anthony Richards got 5 carries, which was like, hey, he's alive. But what's really amazing about that game was that LSU's team rushing total was 32. Now,
The week before, they rushed for like 240 against South Carolina.
You might think, oh, they got 32, so they ran the ball 4 times. No, they ran the ball 27 times for 32 yards with an average gain of 1. 1.2. I took a fifth of a yard away from 1.2. Holy cow. I mean, they had one back rush 7 times for 5 yards and another one 3 times for 0. That's 10 carries for 5 yards. They rushed half a yard.
That's a great, great defensive performance.
Oh, and their big rusher was 9 for 21, which is an average of 2.3. I'll give you 2.3 yards per carry all day. I will give you that. I will untouched give you 2.3 yards per carry all day, and we'll see who wins at the end of the day, man. Holy cow. Holy cow. So what did you think about LSU's quarterbacks while we're talking about LSU's offense?
Well, again, I think the fact that because it was the freshman quarterback, us taking the running game away put all the game on his shoulders. And so with no running game to really give him balance and to make us scared to play action and stuff, you know, it made it easier to defend him. And again, if you go back and like watch the first quarter and the few minutes of the second quarter, you know, you it's a very there's nothing, and it's a very evenly matched game. But there was a point where we started getting to him and rattling him, and then the wheels fell off it.
Yeah.
And I think we 100% got in his head. The pass rush got great pressure. You know, the defensive backs were, you know, all over their receivers. They played a great coverage game. He didn't have a lot of guys open. And then at a certain point, the rush was in his face so much that he was thinking about it and looking down and not looking at field and stuff. And I think he lost his composure, and then they replaced him with other guy. And at some point, it didn't matter with him either. So, again, last week when they played South Carolina, they had 2 weeks to prepare him, and they were at home, and they gave him a very, very simple game plan, like a last year Bo Nix game two kind of game plan. And that isn't going to work against us. You know, Kevin Steele and the defense played a great, great game. And the biggest thing was just the defensive line ate them up, and we didn't have to blitz. We were all over him.
Meanwhile, over on our side of the ball, I'm just looking at some numbers, and you know, Schwartz 4 catches, 123. That huge, like the fourth longest pass in Auburn history. I think the longest pass in Auburn history was in like 89, maybe, or 90. James Joseph took a screen pass and went 99 yards from our 1 yard line for a touchdown against like Pacific, something like that. I think that's it. But 91 yards. And then Seth had 4 catches for 71. He didn't have a touchdown, though, interestingly. Eli Stove, 5 catches for 64. So Stove had 1 catch more for shorter yards, but they were all like key, you know, big plays.
He was big.
Big, yeah. But here and Capers and Shivers each had one. But here's the one I was excited about. JJ Piggies. I'm never gonna get it. 3 catches, 29 yards, 9.7 yard average. Oh man, I could just watch that all day. Everything he does on the field is fun to watch, because when he catches the ball and is running usually kind of diagonal toward the sideline in that little route they give him, when he does that, you're just like, I pity the defensive back that tries to stop this. You know, maybe a big defensive lineman could like wrestle him to the ground, but some little defensive back is going to have to come up and try to find some way to bring him down, and it's probably going to hurt. And then when he's just blocking, oh man, how many times already have we seen replays where he comes across the formation and just wipes out a defender coming in trying to blow up the play? Just like removes him from his shoes. Oh, it's awesome. I love guys like this.
And again, like a lot of times they ran him across the back of the offensive line like he was gonna block, like he, yes. You know. And then they sent him out of the pass pattern. So when he's coming across there, the whole time the defense is thinking, oh, he's a blocker. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden he's in the pass pattern and Bo's giving him the ball and he's heading upfield. So it really is a smart way to use him, because they're so worried about him as the blocker.
And the defensive back that has to come up and tackle him is measuring his future productivity in football against making this tackle. Exactly. So, like, oh, it's
you
nice.
You got to go for the knees and the feet.
Oh, yeah. 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 Just like the squirrel trying to tackle a buffalo, you just like wrap around one leg and gnaw on the knee until he goes down, man. That's your only hope.
It is.
I do like it. So, anything else you see there in the box score that you want to hit on? I like that we distributed the ball all over the place. Nobody got, you know, it wasn't all Seth, you know, for example.
Well, yes. And I think that was the big thing. Well, we used Seth enough, but also we used him as a decoy. You know, they put their best corner on him, but there were also times when Seth ran, you know, into an area and the whole defense followed him and it opened up things for Stove or Schwartz or other people. So he was a big piece of that. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it was on the Capers touchdown, maybe he, you know, Seth went and basically picked the defensive back and that allowed him to get open. So that was the big thing. And also, I just think, like, I really think the offense has evolved over the last several games, and the last 2 games in particular. I think Chad Morris is figuring out what works for Bo and for these receivers and putting them in the position to succeed, and it's working. And I think it made a huge difference. And I think that was Bo Nix's best game.
Oh, definitely. By far.
He had a great game a week ago. So I really think he's coming on and coming into his own. And yeah. I think, you know, they had a good game plan. We've kind of taken advantage of him running, and he's being decisive about things.
Yes.
But also he's distributing the ball. And then again, I like that throw to Schwartz on the deep pass you talked about. Like, he whipped that ball. That was like 55 yards in the air.
Yeah.
And he threw it, you know, very fast, and it got there and hit Schwartz in perfect stride. So that was great to see.
Well, that's when you knew. You talk about when did we know. When that play worked, I'm like, well, everything's going to work now. Because that's something we've tried two or three, at least twice every game, and it never works. And when that worked against LSU, I'm like, oh, well, then, you know, we could bounce one off the goalpost back into the field of play and catch it for a touchdown at this point. It's just, you know, everything's working. But, the thing I think about Bo the last couple of weeks, I think it's just maybe taken Chad Morris a few weeks to figure out. Because, I mean, it's one thing to sit down with him in the film room or over Zoom or whatever they've had to do, you know, under unfortunate circumstances. But it's another to have actual data to go over and crunch.
Yes.
And I think that Chad Morris has probably looked now at what Bo is good at and not so good at. And he's been shaping not just the playbook, but the way the plays are used, the way they're run, the design of them. He's been shaping it to fit in a practical way, you know, not a like, oh, I hope this can work kind of way, but this is what we know has the best chance of success. That's the impression I get.
Exactly. No, you're exactly right. They're taking out the things that don't work well for Bo and putting in things that do work well, but also that play to the strengths of the players around him, you know?
Yes.
The way they're using, you know, Stove and Pegues and these other guys, like the way we're using Schwartz, like they're figuring I think Chad Morris honestly has kind of gotten the offense in a good place. And we got to give Big Nell some credit too, because the offensive line has gotten better the last couple of weeks too. They really pushed LSU around some of this game.
I've had a good feeling about old Barcelona Dragon Jr. from the beginning. I felt like we couldn't have gotten much worse than the situation we've been doing with offensive line coaches the last few years. He just seemed like he had to be a step up. But, you know, I've always said when your football team on offense has a lot of good weapons around the quarterback. And I don't mean this specifically about Bo. I think he's a pretty good athlete. Certainly he can run when he needs to. He can throw the ball pretty darn well. You know, I would say that right now Bo Nix is like a pretty solid C+, B range at everything. He's not great at anything yet, though he's certainly a lot better than he was a couple of weeks ago. For what he is, I don't mean it compared to Joe Montana or something. I just mean for what he is, he's playing at about a B- level right now, which is he was playing like a D a couple of weeks ago. So this is a big improvement. But what I'm getting at is when you're that type of quarterback and you have 5-star talent and 4-star talent all around you on offense, and yet you're having to do everything, you're the one that ends up getting tackled. When you get tackled with the ball a lot, something is wrong with the offense, because you're not the one that should be getting tackled with the ball. You should be getting the ball to the playmakers, and then they get tackled downfield. You see what I mean? When you're the quarterback and you're in some ways the least talented of 5 or 6 guys on the field, and yet you're the one getting tackled with the ball or causing the ball to be turned over, something is wrong. You should be getting rid of that ball and let somebody else be the one that gets tackled eventually. And this week in particular, I felt like Bo was putting the ball where it needed to be so that somebody else was making a play, except when he was running. I mean, you know, but he was getting the ball to his receivers, getting the ball from the backs. And here's one other thing I wanted to mention. Tank. You know, it's in our easy memory, John, when Tuberville took Cadillac to Athens and gave him 40 carries against Georgia.
Yes.
And you watch Tank out there and you think, gosh, I hope we're not overusing him. He got 15 carries.
Mm-hmm.
He was enormously effective and impacted the game tremendously on 15 carries. Cadillac had to be standing over there on the sideline going, man, I had this much in one quarter against Georgia. Tubbs ran me in the ground. So I thought that was a very important statistic. is that Tank did all his damage on just 15 carries.
Yeah, but you're right. Him being in the game caused the defense to react a certain way that opens up everything else.
Yeah. Yeah, and he doesn't have to get killed every play.
Yes.
Less
yes.
wear and tear. He's a freshman. We about killed poor Cadillac.
And how about this? Our star running back will be fresher down the stretch of the season.
That's right. That's right. I mean, you know, this time a year later, Cadillac had a broken collarbone and a broken leg. So, yeah, I approve of all of that. Whew. Let's see. Anything else we want to talk about?
I mean, the only thing I want to say is that, two things. One is this is how great the defense was in that game. LSU did not reach the red zone.
Oh, man, that's true.
And again, like they you know, people for I mean, I think people have lost this because we beat them so bad. That's a good offense, freshman quarterback or not. That's a really good offense with a lot of good players on it.
I told my wife during the game, I said, LSU's defense is suspect, but I said, they're a good offensive team. This is amazing. And I bet some of our listeners can identify with this. When I watch a game like that, I'm not necessarily, there are times, but I'm not necessarily sitting there thinking, oh man, we're putting a beat down on this big rival, you know, ha ha ha. I'm still chewing my fingernails and sweating a little bit all the way through the entire game. I'm just never entirely comfortable. I've seen too much to be ever entirely comfortable. And then you we start naming these statistics like you're naming now, and I'm like, I got to go back and watch the game again, because honestly, at the time, I didn't realize we were doing the things to them that I look back now and realize we did to them.
Yes, yes. It is an interesting rewatch. It's because the first quarter and quarter and a half are very different the rest of the game.
Yes.
Just suddenly the turnover start and the tide turns and it's over. But I just wanted to say, like, a couple weeks ago, we questioned the value of Kevin Steele. Yeah. And I think what I want to say is if we didn't have Kevin Steele, we might have somebody like Bo Pelini, and then we'd really miss Kevin Steele.
Oh, gosh. Well, all right. I named the LSU head coaches that I hope people understood this on Twitter. These are the LSU coaches that we didn't just contribute to them getting fired. They were like fired the day after we beat them. Okay, they were like, or at least it was after our game that everybody knew they were done. And in some cases, they didn't even make it like to the bus in the parking lot. That would be Curly Hallman after the interception game in '94. So in 95, they made this big hullabaloo of bringing in Jerry DiNardo from Vanderbilt. Oh, the magic is back. The magic is back in 95. And by 99, we're beating them 41-7 down there in Baton Rouge. Last time we won down there. And they're like, the magic is getting on the bus and leaving town right now. And so that's DiNardo. That's two. And then I guess Les Miles. I don't think there was one in between there. We ran Les. I guess Les actually came in after DiNardo.
No, Saban was in.
Oh, that's right, Saban. Yeah, well, we beat him his share down there too, 2002. And then and we ran off Les. Les got fired after our game. Lose or leave town, and he left town. And so that's three head coaches in just since 1994 that we've run off. And I'm wondering now if Pelini's going to make it to he's going to make it to the end of the week. Man,
he might not.
Man, so not to mention, somebody said, yeah, they'll fire Orgeron. I'm like, well, you don't fire the guy the year after the national championship. Yeah. Ask Gene Chizik. You give him another year to hang himself. If they go 3-9 next year, then Katie bar the door. But they're not firing Orgeron this year. They'll find all kind of excuses for him, you know. I mean, and it's fair. I mean, he lost more than we did. I didn't think I'd ever see a national champion team with less coming back than Auburn in 2011 and 12. And then I looked at LSU this year. I'm like, well, I stand corrected. They got nothing. They got the water boy. But no, they actually did have, you know, like you said, they have a good offense. Yeah. And they got talent on defense. It's just all, you know, they didn't play last year for the most part.
So. Well, and it's poorly coached, I think. I mean, their defense is an example of some talent kind of running the wrong direction.
So you're saying, well, on the one hand, they're a young team, but they are poorly coached. So, you know.
They have young, very talented guys who don't always know what they're supposed to do.
Don't know what they're doing. And not getting a lot of guidance from above. What about Mark Andy Richards? What did you think? I mean, he didn't have an offense. He, when you're playing behind like the third string of this Auburn team offensive line, you're not getting a lot of help, are you?
No, but it was huge, not just for him, but for Richards, but for all of the Auburn players, that we had a blowout game that they could play the backups a couple of series to get them some playing time, to, you know, to get them some film, to get them some game experience. So if we have to play them down the road, you know, they're better prepared. I really think this was big because now all those guys are like, can go into the bye week knowing that, all right, yeah, I played in an SEC game and the coaches can look at my film and tell me what I need to get better. There was a bunch of young guys on both sides of the ball that played in the fourth quarter, and Richards played, so he's alive. We know he's not in the dog, you know, house of where he will never play.
Honestly, also, I didn't
like,
know.
He didn't do anything that made me go like, oh my gosh, why, where has this guy been either, right?
Well, you know, he had a couple of runs where you could see flashes of it. He wasn't getting any help, wasn't getting any blocks.
Again, he looked solid, but he didn't look to the point where I was like, why is this guy on the bench either?
Right, right. That's fair.
Why
fair
is he enough. Behind Tank?
Yeah. No. I mean, coming into the season, there were people saying that he would be ahead of Tank. And I think that's been put to rest pretty quickly. Tank pretty much slammed the turret on that, if you see what I did there.
I do.
All right. Anything else about the LSU game? That was a heck of a game, huh?
No, just a glorious. And again, the other thing I really think was, because the last three times they've beaten us, and they've beaten us three times in a row, we led in all of those games.
Oh, God.
So I think.
Thanks.
So I think that was part of what happened in this game, Van, is that the Auburn team and the Auburn coaches were like, no, not doing that again. And I really like the drive right before halftime, I think was awesome. Like, I was critical of the, you know, us. How Auburn has played before halftime in some of the other games, that was a great drive. And then Auburn came out at the start of the second half and did another great drive.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, those two kind of back-to-back drives after being up 21, you know, at that the drive right before halftime made it 21-3. Like, those two together, I think, were just huge and just told LSU, like, it's not happening this year. But also, I think that was a – you know, it wasn't by accident. The players and the coaches, I mean, the theme in the locker room was keep our foot on the throat.
Good. That's the best place for it against LSU.
It was intentional that we did not mess around.
Yeah. Well, I enjoyed it thoroughly. So, okay. Well, we got a good bunch of listener questions coming up. So we will be probably revisiting this game a little bit here in a couple of minutes. But first, I want to point out that we don't do commercials on this show. We don't sell ads. We depend entirely on you, our listener, to keep our show going and to let us keep doing these weekly broadcasts all year long. Now, for a while, we would take a few weeks off here and there in the off season, but we pretty much committed now because we have so many patrons that are so supportive. John and I have been trying to do not just weekly shows. You know, occasionally we have to do this or that or the other. Tonight is my wife's birthday, so we're going to try to keep things under like an hour and a half, usually hour and a half show. We'll get it in more concise tonight, but you're not going to miss out on anything. I'm just cutting out some of my extended rants a little bit. But we depend on our listeners for that, and we try to give you guys back your value and things like not only a weekly show, but also the We Believe series at www.auwishbone.com and the books we're working on. We got a new book coming along in a few months and maybe in the off season. And we'll be doing extensive basketball talk and coverage. Can't wait for that. And we also do occasional video shows when there's something, you know, really big to, in fact, we might've done a video show this weekend, except there've been so much going on. I don't know about you, but I've been having like a crazy busy, you know, weekend and everything, and just wasn't able to even suggest that. I know you probably, if you could have, would have, but I didn't have a chance really. But we'll do video shows again as we're able to. We enjoy doing those, like in the basketball season too, when we have a big basketball win. We did that a lot. It was fun. You can catch those on our YouTube channel at AU Wishbone TV. But entirely on our listeners do we depend, And so if you want to do that and be part of the family, go to www.auwishbone.com. Click on the big orange button that says Become a Patron. Go to Patreon, sign up. It's easy. And as little as a dollar a month gets you all the benefits, including being part of our power poll, which John will talk about in just a minute. I also just, before I name our and thank our great patrons, I also want to point out, this is our White Rocket Entertainment episode 499, which is basically I've been numbering them as long as I've been doing them. I know that, you know, Jared has some shows he does with other folks in our network and with Alan and everything, and I just haven't count. They're part of our network, but I didn't have, you know, I don't really have anything to do with them so much other than just being like the boss of the network, and so I don't really count them. But this is the next podcast I record will be my 500th White Rocket Entertainment Network podcast on all three of our channels. And so I'm trying to get John and Jared and the junior agents. I'm sure they're going to love that. You know, Delvin and the gang, Jason, and to come aboard and just talk a little bit. I'll put that episode up on all the channel links so that everybody can hear us talking about the Wishbone, talking about Auburn, talking about our James Bond shows, talking about everything else. In any case, here are the folks that make all that possible. We have to thank Samuel Salvatore, Christopher Burleson, and Bart Lindsay, Bradley Blackman, Chris Usher, Gary Grant, Logan Chilton, Phil Amthor, Richard Stevens, Steve Trawick, Susan Trawick, Tom Anderson, Willie Carden, Ann Kangian, AU Falling Up, Ben Bloodworth, Clay Henson, Dan Thompson, Daniel Odom, David Evers, David Hegler, Emmanuel Seaman, George Gaston, Jacob and Robin Fleming, James Greenwell, Joel Beckham, John Otsuki, Catherine England, Kevin Smith, Mickey B, Phil Davis, Preston Settle, Reynolds Wolf, Rich Reimer, Steve Harlan, Timothy, WDE Richie, Wes Atkinson, William Morgan, Wilson Beard, Winston Body, Alex Wynn, Blake Heron, Boris the Tiger, Cato the Barner, Chris Hilton, Chris Thrash, Colby Butler, Danny Flack. And as it goes to page two, I have to say, it's just so cool that we actually have friendship relationships with so many of these great folks. I don't know all of them, and we don't know, as Bilbo Baggins would say, we don't know half of you half as well as you deserve, or something like that. But it is cool that we know so many of you and hope to get to know the rest of you over the next coming seasons. Daris Benton, David Simpson, Di Bama, Earl Ricks, Eric Mahan, Hugh Anderson, Josh Teal, Kevin Canoy, Kevin Mahan, Lane Middleton, Melissa Blackstone, Mike Finley, Papa Todd, Randall Walker, Rob Morgan, Ross, Russell Milling, Shannon Butson, Sarah Hines, Shane Bailey, Snowdog, Stephen Houston, Tim Pittman, Todd Gray, Tony Perry, Auburn Elvis, Ben Amos, Brandon Sisson, Brandon Smith, Chris Camo, Darren Pyle, David Smiley, Donnie Reynolds, Ivor Evans, James Taylor, Jason Albrick, John Stubbs, John Zavachin, Joey Miller, Joseph Iliff, Justin Bean, Lawrence Kane, Mark Squire, Matthew Flowers, Mick Vijakana, Nicholas Craig, Patrick Williams, Paul Bankson, Robert Drain, Robert O. Sammons, and finally, Russell Souther, Ruth and Darren Sutherland, Spanky, Stephen Thompson, Trevor Johnson, Kenneth Brent Rains, Brant Rumble, and Chris, along with our one-time and our anonymous great donors. We thank you all. Go to www.auwishbone.com. It links you right over to Patreon. You can sign up and be part of the fun. And John, I believe you have the outcome of our power poll.
I do. Here we go. All right,
let's do it.
A low and in distant last place is Vanderbilt.
Gosh.
Dropping by the week.
Shocking.
I think every single person who voted them at the bottom. So that's a statement. Then there's kind of a bottom tier, Mississippi State, Missouri. Then kind of a lower middle tier, Kentucky, South Carolina, Tennessee, Ole Miss.
Okay,
kind of together.
All right.
Then Arkansas and LSU together.
All right, come on.
Then Auburn and Texas A&M and Florida pretty close together. And then Georgia and then Alabama.
Yeah, that sounds about the way I voted. Pretty similar.
Yeah.
Pretty similar.
That seemed pretty reasonable to me. It's going to be interesting. There's some games coming up that are going to influence that. So.
Yeah, there are. Yeah, I really need to see Texas A&M in another, like, challenging game. I haven't felt like, let's see, who have they played that actually beat them?
Alabama.
They played Alabama? Okay, well, there you go.
They lost it.
They'd lose to Georgia. They probably did. They beat Florida, didn't they?
They beat Florida at home in a very close game.
That's their claim to fame right now, is that they beat Florida, yes. I guess. Yeah. Yes. So we'll see. All right. All right. Well, that's fair. I don't want to take anything away from them they deserve. I want to take everything away from them that they don't deserve. So I got to say, we have an Eagle update from Jared, and I think this is his birthday. Because I believe he and my wife have the same, not just the same birthday, they were born on literally the same day. If I remember correctly, maybe I'm just totally hallucinating, but I'm 99% sure that Jared and my wife were born on like the exact same day.
So you don't have facts to back this up.
Dang it.
I don't have facts to back this up.
And if I get it wrong...
Blame yourself.
I will. And then my wife will say...
Dispel once and for all with this fiction.
And then I'll say...
Come on, man.
And there'll be that. So, but no, I'm pretty sure they were born the same day, the same year. And that's pretty cool. But we do have, speaking of Jared, we do have our latest... If I can get through all this stuff that's covering up my computer. We do have the latest... And he was casting about for his superhero comparison this week, and I said something to him, and he kind of seemed like that had some influence. So I'm kind of curious to hear what maybe he ended up going with, and then, of course, we'll find out what the Eagle's up to. So here we go. Here is Jared.
Hello, Van, John, and the rest of the AU Wishbone family. This is Jared Albert, the yard sale artist, with your Auburn superhero battles. I'm making it Ladies Week this week, and I'm going to say that our beloved Auburn Tigers were out there looking like Wonder Woman. Okay. Strong, powerful, noble, good offense, good defense, just a true warrior. Mm-hmm. Good job, Auburn Wonder Woman. But as a caveat, I'm going to say we have Wonder Woman in a full bodysuit. Why a full bodysuit? Because I'm going to give the LSU Tigers, right from the pages of the X-Men, Rogue. Rogue's a cool hero. She can absorb the powers of others, and that's where that bodysuit comes in, because no matter how much she touched our Wonder Woman, she wasn't absorbing any kind of power at all. So it was like all amped up warrior Wonder Woman against regular person Rogue, and it was just a bloodbath, and I couldn't be happier. Didn't need any extra whistles for this one. And with that, we're going to have to check in on Pat and the Eagle. Now, as most of you know, that throughout this entire hubbub with the Bionic Eagle and the Bionic Tiger, Pat has been on vacation. It's just been me taking care of things. I had to deal with the EMP pulse. And if you remember correctly, last time I discovered that we have Bionic Gus Malzahn in our studio. And, you know, that one has worked out pretty well. He's not violent. He's not tearing up the city. He's just supposed to be helping out around the studio. But we've had some problems there. In fact, I need to go talk to him right now. So let me just go talk to Robo Gus. Hey, Gus, can you turn that off, please? One of your jobs around here is to take care of the Eagle and the Tiger. Why didn't you take care of either of them last night?
It was a 10-year reunion of our national championship team. A lot of those guys were here.
All right, look, I don't need excuses. I mean, what did we talk about the other day, Robo Gus?
We talked about... getting better.
That's right. We talked about how the Eagle gets 2 sacks of birdseed every day. And how many have you done today?
0 sacks today.
Exactly. RoboGuess, how do we keep letting this happen?
We face adversity and we overcome it.
Okay, I like your positive attitude, but I need to see real improvements.
We got an off week coming up, so just wanted to make sure everybody understands that.
No, the Eagle and the Tiger need to be fed daily. We can't take a week off.
And we got momentum now. We got an off week.
No, there's no off week. Daily feedings.
Our body's really talking to us.
What does that even mean? Listen, we need at least 14 sacks of bird food to get through the next week for just the Eagle alone. How many sacks? We have to have 14. How many do we have?
And we got 4 left.
You gotta be kidding me. Okay, RoboGus has turned into a logistical nightmare.
Oh, no.
I can't wait for Pat to get back, and I'll get with you guys later. I got a lot of things to take care of. War Eagle, fellas.
Oh, my gosh. It's going down.
Right. Bravo.
I got to say, that is one of the best. That's some of his best work right there, man. That,
you know, one day when the show gets nominated for an Academy Award, it'll be that segment. That
we got to get better at celebrating.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. You know, we may talk about football and break it down and be analytical and everything, but along with our sidekick Jared, we're really just two little country kids outside misbehaving. Oh, I hadn't gotten to use that one in a long time, and it felt good. It felt good to get to use that one. All right, all right. Let's see. Did I miss?
I skipped the.
I see that. That's what I was about to say. I think that we need to go ahead and ask the head parliamentarian here.
Thank you. Order questions to the Prime Minister.
It's time for listener questions. Dun, 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 on the AU Wishbone podcast.
All right, let's blast some questions.
All right, our first question is from the birthday boy.
Yes.
Jared Albert, who says, question for this week. He says, this may be a stupid question, but I'm sincerely asking because I really don't know. You know the Flash touchdown this week? Why are we not doing that multiple times every game? As I understand it, Schwartz can literally outrun every defender. Why do we not just have him go full speed straight down the field and let Knicks throw deep all the time? As long as the line can give Knicks a few seconds, it's not like anyone else is going to beat Schwartz to the ball. What am I missing? So it's a fair question, and I think you saw Alabama use Henry Ruggs a lot this way the last couple of years. I think one thing is we've been trying to do that in the recent games.
Yes.
And he and Bo, were not in sync.
No.
Bo missed him. So some of it is the timing. They had to get it right. And that giving Bo that time, like you referenced in the question, when the offensive line has been an issue. Because if it's the timing is thrown off just a second, then, you know, the Schwartz is running and the spot that Bo is going to throw to is now moved.
Yeah.
And it makes it harder for him. So I think we're going to continue to do it. The other thing on the defensive side is the defenses know how fast Schwartz is. So the safeties in the corners who are playing him, you know, generally stand way back. And as soon as he starts turning up field, they turn and run. They, you know, they're 10 or 15 yards downfield turning and running. So even if he's faster than them, they can stay with him, you know, for most of the way. So what that does, actually, one of the reasons we throw to short to Schwartz so much is because the defenders are so scared of him, they stay far away, and it makes it easy for him to catch a short pass and then gain 5 or 10 yards. So
yeah,
that's part of what's going
on. I think you're right. And yeah, so the two keys there are, one, they're not starting from the same starting line. So even though Schwartz is faster, that doesn't mean Schwartz is always going to be past them. And two, we've been trying it once or twice every game, and it has never worked, and it's basically just throwing away a down. So you don't want to do it once every series, because now you're looking at 3rd and 10 or 3rd and 7 every series. And it's just like, let's run something we know can work instead of just giving away a down. But if it actually is going to start working, then yeah, absolutely, you do it more. No question about it. So
yeah. All right. So a few more questions here. This one's from Steven, Steven A-U-N-I on Twitter. He says, question for the Wishbone. The consensus of opinion on bringing Gus forward, or bringing the Georgia game forward, would be a good thing for Auburn. Is this year just one of those years where this has actually worked against Auburn, taking into account lost spring, new offensive coordinator, new O-line? Do you think the result would be different if this game were to be played at this usual slot? I ask because I think this early loss took Auburn out of being in charge of its own destiny.
It's a valid question. I think it varies every year. I think it just depends on a lot of factors, and those factors are different every year. This year, yeah, we probably would have been better off playing Georgia later. But there have been other years that I would give anything if we had played Georgia the first couple of weeks like that.
The other thing is, I think it was a weird year. That was the first road game. But the other thing is, like, it was just Georgia's day. So
yeah,
I do think Auburn has gotten better since that game. I really do.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if we played them tomorrow on a neutral field, I don't think it would look the same, especially at the line of scrimmage. But again, we'll see. Georgia plays Florida this weekend. We'll see how that game goes, and then you can reevaluate this question.
Yeah, that'll be interesting.
All right, our next question is from Samuel Salvatore, who asks, hello, guys of War Eagle.
War Eagle
says, which rear-end whipping was better out of all three? Auburn, Georgia in 2017. Which of these two was better? Auburn, Georgia in 2017 or Auburn, LSU in 2020? He says, I hope y'all say both of them. But
this year just feels so weird, though. I enjoyed beating LSU because I enjoy beating LSU at anything. But this year, just everything about it is so weird that it just doesn't hold quite the same panache to me as if that stadium had 87,000 people in it, you know, and we were undefeated or something and all. I mean, but it's still fantastic. You know, it's going in the record books. There's not going to be an asterisk beside it in the column, in the win-loss column. There will be for the season, I think, but just a note, a historical note, you know. Oh, that was the year there weren't very many fans. But in terms of, like, a win over LSU, it counts every bit as much as every other win over LSU ever has counted, so.
I mean, I guess I would still vote for the Georgia 2017 game. I just think that was
fun.
Both the teams were better. I mean, Auburn was better, and Georgia was infinitely better than this LSU team. And I mean, that's the Georgia team that played, you know, for the national title, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And Auburn just annihilated them.
Really did.
So, I mean, I think that's a statement about how great that win was.
That was the Auburn team that should have been in the playoffs.
Yeah. Yes. All right, our next question is from Bradley Blackman, who says, has Auburn turned the corner, or is LSU so bad that it's a false sense of hope? I think the South Carolina game was a complete anomaly based on how we played the last 2 weeks. I lean towards Auburn turning the corner. I'm excited to see how we finish, but it will be a guarded excitement. War Eagle, Bradley Blackman.
Man, this season, every team has been Jekyll and Hyde, you know? I mean, it's like from 1 week to the next, I saw somebody tweeted yesterday like a transitive thing, and it was a complete circle. And it's just like, that doesn't surprise me at all this year, because everybody's beaten everybody.
Yes.
So, I mean, right now Alabama's undefeated, but they're the only ones, right? And I don't know that they're going to make it all the way. They beat Georgia, that goes a long way, but they still got to get by us. We never know, right? And they got... Mm-hmm. They got other opponents, so I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, I mean, I do think, I don't know about turning the corner, but Auburn has improved. I mean, and I think we, you know, again, we were ready to bury Gus and the coaching staff a few weeks ago. I think we got to give them some credit, all of them, because the team has genuinely gotten better.
Yes, they have.
And they've eliminated mistakes. They're using... players have improved, and I think the way coaches are deploying them has improved. And I think Auburn is, you know, again, this is the other thing. We're 6 out of 10 weeks through the season for us. We got a bye week next week. We played 6 of our 10 games. So,
Yeah.
This
has seemed like a lot of football crammed into a very short space, honestly. No filler.
I don't think it's a false sense of hope. Again, we have 4 games left. Yeah, we played Mississippi State, and they're bad. We played Tennessee, they're not good. We play Alabama, and that'll be a very tough game. And then we play AM at home, which basically I think is going to be a toss-up kind of game. It's going to be two good teams at that point. So, you know, I think I feel like we're going to be in, you know, a good shape. And I think we've generally used the bye weeks during the seasons in the past to work on things. And I know the team needs a week off to rest and get healthy after getting beat up for 6 weeks.
Yeah.
All right, a couple more questions. This one's from Paul Bankston, who says, is it just me, or is Auburn getting relentlessly hammered over the questionable calls that went their way versus the Hogs and Ole Sis? Gary and Brad couldn't help themselves on Saturday. It's just football. It happens all the time in almost every game. Will the decisive beatdown of LSU shut up the huge army of anti-Auburn trolls? I think this is part of what Gus meant when he said Auburn faces more adversity than most.
I don't think that's what he meant, but I agree with everything else. I agree that the LSU game did kind of put a cap in that, because they had some other narrative to talk about besides, you know, if we had won this game because of a referee not blowing the whistle when he wasn't supposed to or something, I think it would have just been... That's all you would have heard. That's all you would have heard. I mean, I heard more about Auburn winning because of referees the last couple of weeks, 2 of the last 3 weeks, than I did about Nebraska winning or Colorado winning with 5 downs that time. I mean, come on. But no, I think what Gus meant about, maybe I'm wrong. I heard him say it twice. I mean, I heard the same thing twice. I thought he meant that at Auburn, it's tougher sometimes because of all the politics around you and the pressure from the administration, the fans, and everything.
But also, I think the other thing he was talking about was, you know, our division rival is Alabama. We play in the SEC West. Like, it's going to be tough sometimes. And
Yeah.
There's these other things going on there you can't control. And it, again, we talked about the things. I think a lot of the SEC stuff, the officiating stuff, was kind of overblown and people were kind of overdoing it, that narrative. And you're right, some of it was a media thing. And in this game in particular, it was just filler. And it's another example of what people have said. And what I need to do going forward is just sync up the Auburn radio network with the TV and turn off the TV broadcast.
That's always a good idea.
All right, a couple more questions. This is from Johnny Dent, who says, I hate to ask a glowingly optimistic question after this week, but how sustainable was Bo Nix's passing chart from this game? And it's very impressive, but it's all basically on the left-hand side or the right-hand side, almost nothing in the middle. He says, I get this is a good way to counteract the defense determined to stop Tank up the middle, but how much does it handicap the Auburn offense against defenses with elite defensive talent? And I think, you know, Auburn went to the edge specifically against LSU because it was there and because LSU was coming against Tank. I do think Auburn will throw the ball in the middle some more in the second half of the season. We'll see. I think some of that's there, and I think they purposely went to this because Bo Nix is very comfortable with this and because it was LSU's weakness. So I outside of Alabama, I think that kind of thing would work against everybody we're going to play. Next question is from Ryan.
I was just going to say, I would think when we're playing a team with that, with, as he said, elite defensive talent, what would you suggest would work? You know, I mean, you got to try something. So, I mean, it's not like we're sacrificing a good game plan for this. So this was the good game plan. So
you're right. Like, it's one of the things, like, you don't have to have complete coverage of the field every single game. And yes, when we play Alabama, we're going to need to throw the ball in the middle of the field. Ryan Brown says, play of the game, the Anders Carlson tackle.
There it is.
Yeah. I really was. Because that would have, think about the momentum shift at that time. That would have been gigantic. That would have given them life again and brought them back.
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
Ben Bloodworth asked a question for the pod. The team finally seemed to find their identity on Saturday. Should we have hope that Gus and Chad have developed something that works, or is this our annual Gus looks good enough to save his job game?
I mean, the way that the defense played, the way that the line played, the way the offensive line played, the way that Nix played, all of those things to me look like upward trends and not like, I mean, it looked like this is the game we should have had against Ole Miss, and we had it against a much better defense. So
a better overall team.
Yeah. So I feel like this isn't just a flash in the pan to let Gus keep his job, although it may have that effect. I felt like this is a trend that we should look more to come. And then we have a week off to kind of heal up. I mean, I feel like, who we got next, Mississippi State or Tennessee?
Mississippi State. And we're Mississippi State a week from Saturday, and we're the 4 p.m., 3 p.m. Central SEC Network game.
Okay, that's good. It's not the 11 o'clock game. That's good. So, yeah, I feel like we should come out and have something for them.
Mm-hmm.
And then, man, I want Tennessee so bad. I want to beat Tennessee the way we beat LSU. I really do.
All right, and our last question is from Carl Von Drunker on Twitter, who says, bye week musings. Technically, the whole Auburn football team could return next year. What percentage chance would you give for that occurrence? And then he said, what record would Bruce Pearl have to be at to get the fire Bruce Pearl treatment this year? there is no record that Bruce Pearl could turn in that would make everybody want to fire him. He could go 0-20.
Absolutely right.
So, yes, I mean, this year does not count in terms of eligibility. Every single player could return. I think some players, will go on to the NFL because they're ready and they want to go. I think Seth Williams is probably number one on that list.
Gotta think so.
There's a few other guys that would, that could, like Big Cat Bryant's a senior.
Yeah.
He would probably get drafted. He'll do some kind of evaluation and decide. And then another underclassman, like Sherwood's a junior, and I think he would get some real look in the NFL.
John, just imagine if Eli Stove comes back for another year.
Yes. I'm telling you. I love that idea.
That would be his sixth year. He was on the 2016. He was playing substantial minutes on the 2016 team.
Wow.
With Sean White, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
16 was the Sean White and the big running back. I always forget his name. And Keyshawn. I mean,
Petway?
And Kerryon. Yeah, Petway and Kerryon. Yeah. Stove was on that team with Petway and Kerryon and Sean White. And he could be back next year. Oh my gosh. That would put him in elite. He should win the inaugural Brandon Cox That Guy Again award.
We've seen that guy at some other school, so.
Yes, we have. But, I mean, I think Brandon Cox currently has that trophy. But Eli would win it if he came back. And he could, because I don't think he's going to get drafted in the NFL after his body of work so far. I mean, he's been good. I just don't think he's been, like, snap him up for the, you know, the Dolphins or something good. So,
yes.
Good Lord. That's crazy. Is that it?
That's it.
All right, let's take a quick and dirty trip around the Southeastern Football Conference.
Trip around the FTC.
And we know that Auburn doesn't play, and we've already talked about Auburn from this past weekend. I got to tell you, that Georgia-Kentucky game had me kind of looking, keeping one eye on the scoreboard all day. I thought the Wildcats were going to pull that thing out, going to find a way to do it. It was 7-3 for a long time. Couldn't get it going.
Georgia was trying very hard not to take any chances on offense.
Yeah. Yeah,
but I would say for everybody he played most of that game. Gatewood did not make a bunch of difference in that game.
He runs. He takes off with the ball in Cam-like fashion. He just doesn't get Cam-like results. It seems like he always gets tackled.
Nobody is the athlete that Cam is. So.
No. Ole Miss 54-21 over Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt, I just don't even know anymore. I just don't know what to do about it.
They're going 0-10.
Yeah, they're what we thought Arkansas was going to be. Alabama 54 was it? It was like 41.
Maybe it was. Keep going, Alabama.
Okay. Well, anyway, it doesn't really matter. Alabama beat the stew out of them, and they continue to live off of that first game win over LSU. So. Texas A&M 42-31 over Arkansas.
It was 41 the minutes, Meyer.
41. Okay. Again, doesn't really matter. Texas A&M Arkansas. I think that was my lock of the week that Arkansas would win that game. Maybe I don't remember. Yep. But they played them tough. They played them a lot tougher than people thought. I think Arkansas is an interesting team this year.
Yeah, but gotta give A&M some credit at home. Mm-hmm. They played well, and Kellen Mond looked comfortable. They've gotten better. They're not, you know, playoff team or anything, but they're not bad.
And then the brawl. Did Florida win the fight and the game, or just the game? I didn't see the whole game over Missouri.
They won the game.
Yeah.
Going away, but yeah. The fight, you know, was just. Stupid. And Dan Mullen's a freaking idiot. So.
Well, yeah, he is. We already knew that. He just reaffirmed it for us. But yeah, I'm surprised. I thought Missouri had a little more fight in him than that. I thought they could make some people surprised. But
again, I think this is what people forget. It's a little bit like the LSU game. The Missouri has a brand new young quarterback, and I think this is the first real big road game he's played in.
Yeah.
So. When your first big road game is at Florida,
yeah, ask Bo.
And the pressure is on to do something. It's tough.
It is tough. Ooh, that was an ugly game last year. Okay, so we got the world's largest outdoor cocktail party, which I guess would be the world's most intimate outdoor cocktail party this year. Not a lot of world's largest going on this year. But what do you think? I mean. Florida's got a puncher's chance, right? But I just don't see them scoring much against Georgia's defense.
But they got some real difference makers. They got Pitts and that guy Tony on the offense that are both really good. Mm-hmm. And Trask is solid. So I think they can, you know, it's interesting because it's kind of strength versus strength, right? Florida's strength is their offense and Georgia's strength is their defense.
It really is.
But then can Georgia score a bunch of points on Florida's defense?
Not a lot. Yeah. So, this smells like a 17-13 game somehow.
It's fair.
I'm not sure who's which.
Yeah. So, and this goes back to what we talked about, kind of the value of offense versus the value of defense kind of thing, too. So.
I know. Well, Vanderbilt at Mississippi State. So, Mississippi State gets their second win, probably.
Yes.
And A&M at South Carolina. That, to me, might be actually the most intriguing matchup. Because here's the thing. Tennessee at Arkansas sounds good, but it's just like, you know, this past weekend, other than Georgia, Kentucky, every game was a blowout,
yeah.
Which you don't see that often, or at least a high scoring affair with double digits. And I look at Tennessee, Arkansas, and on the one hand, I say, you know, that's an interesting matchup. On the other hand, I think either one of these teams is capable of collapsing and getting blown out in that game. And I don't know which one it's going to be. That's a very unpredictable game.
A&M goes in there, doesn't make mistakes. They should win by 14 points. But if they go in there and screw around, then it's going to be a nail biter.
Yeah. So I'm thinking I'm going to, yeah, I mean, I just feel like South Carolina played their best game against us. So the Texas A&M Arkansas game has got to be
my cold, dead hands.
Lock of the week.
And that's very tentative, but that's where I'm going is Texas A&M or Carolina.
You're picking Carolina or A&M?
A&M.
All right.
And then again, Arkansas, Tennessee. That could be a 7-7 game, a 3-3 game, or a 41-0 game. Either direction, I have no idea. But I think it's the one Arkansas
is better than Tennessee, but we'll see.
That's what I'm saying is it could be a blowout. I don't know. Or it could be tough. But again, that's the one I think I'm most interested in watching. Although, honestly, all four of these in various ways have a factor that intrigues me. All four of them. But even Vanderbilt, Mississippi State intrigues me a little bit.
Well, again, I'm going to watch that because we play Mississippi State next. And I want to see.
There you go. And you had a couple other suggestions since Auburn's not playing.
Yeah, just if you need something else to entertain you this weekend, again, Friday night, BYU plays Boise State. BYU's great. They're fun to watch. They got a good young quarterback.
Okay.
This is their biggest game of the year. If they beat Boise, they're going to go undefeated.
Wow.
If they crush Boise, people will be talking about how they should be in the playoff.
Wow.
So that'll be fun. And then the Pac-12 returns this weekend. They got a Friday night game. And then on Saturday night, Oregon-Stanford plays.
Oh, that's always fun.
Yeah, and the Pac-12 is doing some 9 a.m. local time kickoffs, so it'll be like noon. And I think Southern Cal, Arizona State is one of those on Saturday.
This is the Pac-12 calling up the networks. Hello, networks. This is the Pac-12. It's 9 a.m. there. What time is it here? What time is it there? 7 p.m.? 11 p.m.? It's Saturday morning here. Is it Tuesday there? What time is it? You know.
They're like, we're still finishing our mimosas. Can we kick off now?
Yeah, exactly. Oh my gosh. Well, the BYU thing is intriguing. I got to text my cousins. Both of my cousins went to BYU, so I'm curious to see what they think about that. Interesting. All right. Well, I think that's pretty much it. Any last thoughts before we wrap up for tonight?
No, it's glorious to have a game that wasn't a nail biter, to have a game we could all relax and enjoy and have fun and beat the crud out of a conference rival.
Having our first two touchdowns be on drives of, I think, 4 and 99 yards. And it just made me say, there you go. All right. Well, our time is up. We thank you for yours. War Eagle, John.
War Eagle, man.
Thanks for listening to the AU Wishbone. Find links to everything we do at www.auwishbone.com. For more Auburn fun, join us on Twitter at @auwishbone and at facebook.com/auwishbone. War Eagle.
The AU Wishbone is produced by Van Allen Plexico and John Ringer. Copyright 2020.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone Podcast.